the Leafs are back in action tomorrow night. Mitch Marner has joined the group, and he's back on that top line. And a few guys went into COVID protocol today.
Yeah,
Kasha being one, Hall, and I believe Nick Ritchie being the third. I don't think Nick Ritchie was going to play tomorrow night, but Hall was going to play. Kasha was going to play. And that might, you know, in a weird way, kind of loosen up the purse strings in terms of the cap maneuvering that they're going to have to go through here, because they got to figure out what they're going to do with the salary cap. So this may actually afford them a couple of games where they don't have to worry about that as much. But
so would that be the second time getting COVID in like a month? Is that what I'm to understand?
I don't think those guys had it the first round. I think the only guy that hasn't had it is Matthews now. Like this round.
This round, yeah. He's had it before.
He's had it before, but he's got to be just dodging bullets. Like, he's on such a heater right now, and you show up and test positive, even if you're completely asymptomatic, you can't play. They're going to keep him out of the lineup.
I mean, Kasha, I believe, had it in Boston, like, last year or whatever. Like, he had such a bad year in Boston as far as injuries and all that. I think he got caught in the COVID cloud as well, too. So
really?
It's unfortunate, but he's been very good. Kasha's been good for them. He's a guy, I think, that... Not that you miss him out of the lineup, but he's been very effective
me.
I've liked him. I think he's a heavier player than I expected out of him. Winning loose puck battles, that type of stuff. Like, he's a real nifty player.
I agree with you. He's kind of guy that can move up the lineup like he has here without Marner and actually give you some impact minutes where it's not just by default, right? Like, someone's got to go up the lineup. So, all right, I guess this guy, technically, we could label him as someone who will. Because he has to by default. Kasha is on the third line, maybe playing out of position a little bit based on what he can do when he's healthy and playing well. He's been really good for them this year. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our TSN hockey analyst, Mike Johnson. I would apply that thought to Michael Bunting, too. I think Bunting's been really, really quality for them. Who do you think has had not a bigger impact, but more of a surprising impact on this team for you, Johnny? Is it Kasha or is it Bunting?
It's Bunting for me, for sure. I've always been a bit of a Kasha fan. I've been on the Kasha train, even though I couldn't get out of the medical tent for a few years. Like, I knew that he would be good if he ever could play, if he could just stay in the lineup. And Noodles, you're talking about him being kind of a heavier presence. I think part of what makes him heavy is that he barrels into spaces kind of recklessly. Right. So, like, he brings his full force and speed into collisions and into the boards and into the front of the net, and part of that's why he gets hurt sometimes, because he does find himself in some tricky spots. But I believe he was a really good player. Bunting, I just didn't know. I mean, he played so little last year. I know he had whatever it was, 11 goals in 27 games or something like that in Arizona. But, yeah, there's a hat trick in there, and I don't know what to make of Arizona at the end of last year. I saw him at the World Championships. Fast. He's edgy. Talks a lot. But I wasn't sure that would translate to top six matchups with Toronto. I thought, you know what, maybe on the third line he could be a speed guy, but I didn't know that would be with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and not really looking out of place at all. I didn't know he had the kind of refined offensive game to play with those guys. Now, he's not those guys, of course, but you have to be proficient enough to play with them, and I didn't know, and I was doubtful that he could, and I've been wrong. He absolutely can.
Johnny, all we talk about with the Maple Leafs, and I'm going to give you the question that I get at my grocery store around the corner from my condo, so it's not like I'm stirring up trouble. It's the question from the grocery store. And it seems like it's just cap, 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 up against the cap. And the guy came up to me today, and he's like, watching the team without Marner, Marner can kind of loosen the restrictions again because he makes so much money, and you could turn him into two good players. And I generally just say, whatever, have a good day, blah, blah, blah. I'm not getting into 20 minutes of Leaf talk, but do you think that would ever happen where they look at that and they're like, we got to sooner or later get away from being so cramped up against the cap, and that's the way we could do it?
No, because I don't think that would get them away from the cap. Like, they might get another extra player, but they're not trading Mitch Marner and shedding $10 million in salary. Whatever money they would offload trading anybody, they would immediately start looking around to find players that they could pay more good players that they would take them right back up to the cap. I don't think the Maple Leafs would ever operate a comfortable $4 million below the cap. I don't know if the market would tolerate it. I don't think that's Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan's style. I mean, they spend right to the very limit and figure out a way to manage it with Brendan Pridham and the rest. So you could trade it for two $5 million players, and you could we could have a discussion if that would make them better or not. But I don't
I
think
almost
it would
understand
make them
more... the tone of the guy's question was like, "Are you ever actually going to get $11 million out of Mitch Marner or whatever it is, 10-9-3?" Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's awfully talented, who hasn't scored a power play goal in over a year.
He was first team all league last year. First team. There was no better right winger in the league. So, I mean, I don't know if that's worth 11 or not, but it's worth something. That's not to suggest he's perfect. Power play needs some work. Scoring goal at the playoff production. Obviously, there's stuff there, but, you know, I think he, you know, not many guys make more than him, but he for last year at least, he delivered pretty nicely on whatever amount of money that they're paying him. You know, I think the contract is tough. It's tough because you want him to be dominant. You want to be McDavid. You want to be Matthews. Those are the guys who make $11 million and not a, like a, maybe a slider assist, primary assist winger. But that's what Panarin is. Panarin makes $11 million, not quite, but 10-something. You know, he's kind of like that kind of player. Except he has the benefit of playing with Austin Matthews and Panarin doesn't. So I don't know. I know it's a 51.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm not trying to stir the pot. I'm talking yeah. grocery store.
Right.
Beside
yeah,
my
no,
condo.
No.
And Panarin is a good comparable because he makes things happen.
Yeah, he makes things happen. It's a conversation worth having though, especially if they don't win this year, because I think you know Morgan Riley's raise will kick in. Jack Campbell's raise, whatever that's going to end up being, will kick in, and money will be very, very tight again, and they'll be trying to allocate it, and maybe they have to look at trading one of those four guys. And if you're trading one of those four guys, you're not trading Tavares, and you're going to trade Austin Matthews. And at this point, like based on value alone, you know, William Nylander probably provides return for the dollar every bit as much as Mitch Marner, if not more, because he makes about 70% of what Mitch makes. Maybe they have that conversation, but I don't think that is at all part of the thought process about this team and where they're going right now.
Johnny, we were having a spirited debate in the 4 o'clock hour about the All-Star game process and guys getting there, guys, you know, you can understand the league's standpoint of, hey, we want to have a touch point for every organization. But then when you leave guys who have earned All-Star status at this point of the season off the list, it causes some frustration. What do you make of the whole format and any suggestions to tweak?
So I get, as you mentioned, it makes sense. It's a corporate event, it's a fan event, and you want to cater to every fan in every market. So everybody, you don't only want to watch an All-Star game where nobody from our team is there, but nobody from Montreal deserves to go there. So, you know, right. Like there is that balance you're trying to find. So how do we achieve both things? Make it available to the most worthy players, and also try to include somebody from every organization. I got two suggestions for you, and they both seem to make pretty easy sense. One, invite specific players for just the skills contest and treat that as the organizational representative. So if you want to bring, Zdeno Chara for the hardest shot, well, there's your Islander, right? Because no real Islander stands out and deserves to go there. You know, and like they do in the NBA, just guys come in for the dunk contest and the guys come in for the three-point contest. So maybe you could, knock off some teams that way by just having them involved in the skills contest. The other way would be just open it up to more players. It doesn't have to be such a restricted lineup. Add three more players. If you added three more players per conference, then you would probably avoid any egregious misses. Because, I mean, Nazem Kadri obviously is the lightning rod right now because he's
right.
He's fourth in the league in scoring. He's second in points per game. He plays on a great team. And he there's no one in any way, shape, or form can argue that he doesn't belong there. He belongs there way over Nathan MacKinnon by a mile. And yet, I know they want stars there to sell it all. So just open it up a little bit more to let those guys go. Like, Nas deserves to be there. Mikko Rantanen, not just to go Colorado guys, he deserves to be there. Roman Josi is not invited. Like, those three guys, have to be there. I don't care.
Josi's got 38 points.
He's amazing. He's having a Norris caliber season, and he's not even going to make the All-Star team. So and I get it for Ovi, and Sid, Connor, Leon, Austin, they're going to go every year. So maybe for them it's not a big deal. But for Nazem Kadri, it's a really big deal. He's not been there.
Right.
You know what I mean? He hasn't earned his way in there like that. And I think guys like that who play well enough to warrant that pick should not have it missed or skipped because, well, we need to get somebody from – we need to get Clayton Keller in there, right? Like, it just right. doesn't make sense. Yeah, I think there are ways to accomplish both without excluding organizations, but make sure that the very deserving are there.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's never going to be a perfect formula. People are always going to complain. Like, that's become abundantly clear. And I'm leading the charge with it, admittedly. It's never positive feedback with the NHL All-Star Game. It's just lost what it once had. It's not a meaningful event.
Never positive feedback.
There's never positive feedback. It's like constantly it's, you know, it's just never. It's like Service Ontario. No one enjoys being down there. It's right. always a mess. And this is basically what's happening with the All-Star Game. Noodles, you would have seen this front and center last night. That tilt with Lucic and Sabarin was
wow.
a beast of a fight. And Lucic posted the pic of his knuckles today. He yeah. landed like Sabarin's a tough guy, man. I give him credit. He's got stones. Like he'll fight and get into it. And he took a few last night and stood up, got through the tilt.
Yeah,
I think he exited stage left there for
well,
a bit.
Did you dislocated his finger. His finger was
pointing
on sideways.
The wrong direction.
Yeah, it was on sideways, and he pointed as he was skating off. He was kind of like showing the guys on the bench, like, "Hey, I'm gonna go get repairs here."
Yeah,
like you know, and it was. I mean,
what's a fight like that with half the building full and masks on and no eating and drinking? Like it must
you
have
know
been
what?
Loud hearing some pops. I would think last night
it was. And here's the other thing: regardless of you know, it moves the needle whether you are the anti-fighting crowd or not. We're talking about it, right? Like, you know, Calgary's lost four in a row. Ottawa's not a team that, you know, moves the needle for a lot of people. But that Lucic-Sabarin fight, like, there were people that enjoyed it. I mean, again, it depends on what side of the fence you're on. And it wasn't the thing that one was Lucic trying to get some energy for his group. Like, that was a, you know, would you call it a staged fight? Because it wasn't an emotional one.
One of those ones
right
where he
draw.
Goes up to the guy and says, "Hey, you going to give me one here? Because I got to get something cooking here."
But ultimately, you know, it was weird, but it was a heavyweight tilt. Like,
big
that
fight.
Sabarin took some big blows, and Lucic is as tough as anybody in the league. You just don't see it anymore. Like, he doesn't have a lot of takers, and you know, fighting is trending in that direction out of the game. Like, it's just, it is what it is. But, like, it was kind of a unicorn. And I saw it trending on Twitter right away. People were like, "Man, you see this scrap." And, again, whether it's negative
the league does,
press
the league
or
can't
not.
Can't publicly promote it anymore because of everything that's going on in the court system and where we are with science. And I understand that. But I think the league, if you were to get them in a candid moment, they'd say, "We'd love to have that plastered all over NHL.com, everywhere." Because it's just a fact. It gets people talking. It gets people watching.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah. If they wanted it out of the league, Hayes, they'd have it out of the league, right? In two seconds. They would just change the penalties. There would be no fighting. So there's obviously an appetite for it. But my only thing would be this. Like, if that's a strategically staged fight, like, I know Sabarin is tough, no doubt, and he wants to do right by the code of the tough guys. And Lucic asked for one. Lucic deserves a lot of respect for his career. Why are you giving it to him? Like, you're up 2-0 in the game, nothing going on. It didn't matter. Like, there was no big response to Calgary winning the fight. But like, if I'm Sabarin, I would say, "Nah, I'm not right now, Luch. Like, we're doing just fine in this game." I would be. I don't understand the entire code of the tough guy because I certainly was not one of them. But I think I get what they're coming from. But I would have been inclined just for the game to say, you know, "Not right now. We're fine just as it is."
Yeah, I get that. The only thing is, I would say that, you know, all four of us weren't wired like that. It's just Sabarin feels he needs to do that to stay in the league, right?
Yes.
Because he's, you know, a week from now he might not be. Because if they get healthy or they get guys out of COVID, that type of thing, he's back to the taxi squad. He's back to the minors. So, you know,
Noodles,
what? Yeah.
I always think of this, though, for guys like that in that situation. So he dislocated his finger. I don't know what that is. 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I don't know how long that takes to get better before he can stick handle.
Yeah.
Guess where he gets to get better?
3 weeks of pay at the National Hockey
in the
club.
NHL. But he's not getting better in the American League.
That's
he's getting better in the NHL. Off the cap, no big deal. Getting his full salary, living the plush life in the hotel, the nice rink with the good facilities. So if there is a silver lining to dislocating your finger, if you're imminently going to return to the taxi squad or to Belleville, I guess that would be it. He's going to get paid.
Oh, as soon as it was getting healthy, I'd tell someone to smash a sledgehammer over it again.
The groin of the back would act up, unless you're getting in the lineup.
Yeah, you're
just
right.
Sucker me from behind, right? Like walking into the rink the day I'm supposed to be healthy. Concussed. Yeah,
you're right. I don't know. We all have played with somebody who,
everyone's like played with somebody.
Like, my arm.
Or the first battle drill, they'll tell somebody to cross-check them, and they say, you got to do it early because I got to go down, and I got to make this look like this happened on the ice.
Yep. They're rolling into practice with a torn ACL, but like, listen, just slew foot me early.
Yes.
Let me get down out of here. I did it while, riding a motorcycle, but I got to hurt myself during the game.
Yeah, there's guys that are just struggling to put their foot in their skate for practice. They get in there, that first drill they go down, they're like, oh, my God, my ankle. Like,
that's what we classic. Need. That's the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's funny because it's true.
It's true.
I know people that it's happened with.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we all do.
That's a veteran move. if you don't need the team finding a way to either write you off or get out of the contract or get pissed off at you.
Hayes, do you remember, is it Aaron Boone? He blew his ACL playing basketball and he's playing for the Yankees back then.
That's
he had a $20 million contract, and he told them he blew it playing basketball, and they voided the contract now.
That's right.
It worked out okay for him. But if I'm him, I get to the gym. Some way, somehow,
do
I get on a treadmill
and fall down,
and I collapse. Yes. I'm like, yeah, that's right. I was doing some plyometrics, and my knee blew out on me.
Brian Leach, I think, fell out of a cab. Like he slipped out of a cab, and
John Graham.
John Graham's a famous another one, but this one I think happened at the Blues years ago at the Blues golf tournament.
Eric Johnson fell out of the golf cart.
And broke his leg or his ankle or something.
He tore his ACL. He was out for the year.
Oh,
that's
I almost blew my shoulder out right before the Stanley Cup Finals. I had my buddies down from Miami up in Carolina, and we were at Raleigh Country Club all day. We had 30 beers each, Bud Lights, and he took a left. And I was looking down the wrong fairway, and I went out of the cart and landed on my shoulder 2 days before the Stanley Cup Finals, and he just drove the cart over. The beer was still up in the air, not a drop. And I just looked at him, and I said, bud, that would have been really bad if I couldn't play in the finals. And I got back in the cart. But it was close to being ugly. Out of the cart, like one of those bad ones where you just fly out, go rolling around, and I landed right on my shoulder.
The cart's a danger zone, man. You hear some horror stories with the carts. I mean,
dude, for some reason, it seems so simple, but there's some gruesome things that happen. There's pictures every 6 months of just a golf cart on fire.
Yeah.
On fire on the golf course.
Fire. If you get an old golf cart that the brakes are wonky and you get like a slippery cart downhill, your life is flashing in front of your eyes. Like, you're legit. Like, I don't think this is going to stop. It's just going to keep going. And if it starts rolling, I'm in big trouble, man. Big trouble. It's dangerous. It's dangerous.
You lock up those brakes on a hill, on a wet hill, you start sliding sideways. Like, who knows what might happen?
Dude, any kind of grass hill. I drive like a 90-year-old man because I'm afraid if you just touch the brake, you are spinning out on a wet grass hill, and you're done.
Yeah.
You are done.
If you're doing donuts on a side hill, you're honestly, at any point, you could flip, and you're in big trouble. Yeah. Big trouble. Well, you made it. You made it to the Cup Final, so it's all good.
Yeah.
And the rest is history, obviously. All right, Johnny, we'll leave it there, buddy. Enjoy the weekend. We'll do it early next week.
All right, boys. Have a good weekend.
There's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They take away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lean history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com.